You want to know what you need more of in your life? Politics. Yeah, nobody ever said that. But if you've got to go ahead and spend money on one nonfiction book, it's got to be the ultimate clash of wisdom, awesomeness, and then obviously the politics. But why not a little bit of comedy? Why not a little bit of a memoir? Why not something that's going to make you say, hey, I actually enjoyed reading this. I laughed. I learned something in the process. Check out my book. It's an Amazon bestseller. You may have heard of it. It's Stay Away from the Libertarians. It talks about all the things you think you might know about libertarians, plus a lot of things that I bet dollars to donuts you don't know about. You can get it on Amazon and Barnes & Noble online. So go on right now. You can get it in print or ebook or Kindle or whatever you call it. Just go out and get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble online today. It's Stay Away from the Libertarians by Remso W. Martinez. Happens to be me. You know what's worse than having to schedule your first colonoscopy? Getting ready for another presidential cycle. Oh, by the way, we've got Larry Sharp joining the program. Remember Larry? Almost became governor of New York. All that jazz and more. This is the Remso Martinez Experience. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. As always, this is the Remso Martinez Experience. Go ahead and do me a quick favor. Follow me on Twitter at Remso4VA. That's R-E-M-S-O-F-O-R-V-A. Follow me. I'll follow you back indiscriminately. That way, we'll keep this awesome conversation going on after the show. As you know, things recently have taken a turn away from politics. Why? Because I'm just a man of the people at the end of the day. We're talking about the topics you want to talk about. And what's really funny is I was making my next list of people I was going to reach out to, especially as we're getting ready for another presidential cycle, lots of craziness going on in the country, and, you know, got to have these conversations at some point, because if you're not having them with me, you're having them with someone else, and they probably hate you, and, you know, I love you, so, you know, got to give the people what they want, just a man of the people. And as I was putting my list together, I went ahead and checked my email, and I got an email from someone that was going, and they were scheduling their client, their boss, on a bunch of shows because they've got something crazy going on. I was like, huh, what's going on in this email? And I'm like, oh, it's Larry Sharp. Haven't heard from Larry for a while. So, what ends up happening? Reach out, get him on the show the next day. Ladies and gentlemen, former 2016 vice presidential candidate for the Libertarian Party and former candidate for governor of the great state of New York, Larry Sharp. Larry, You don't seem to take a break, take a rest, take a chill pill, take a nap ever.
I kind of I can't believe you brought me on talking about colonoscopies. You know I'm over 50, right?
You know, I'm just a man of the people. Got to talk about relevant stuff.
I know that is relevant for me. That's not good anyway. But yes, I'm happy to be back, my friend. I am. You know, I've been here before, and I'm happy to be back again. I don't stop, and I don't stop because the war isn't over, right? I am still a Marine at heart. And the war isn't over, so we still got to keep fighting. We take some defeats, but we get back up and we keep going. So we have to. And the most important thing I hope that people saw from my last campaign was we built up a lot. We built up infrastructure we didn't have. We showed people how a campaign should be run. We now have more people who know how to run a campaign. We know, as you saw, we have people now who know how to call media and get people scheduled on things. Stuff that we have not done very well as a party. And you were teasing me about not stopping, because what we also have not done well as a party is supported each other. We have a very very bad habit of simply taking a big dump on each other every time something goes wrong. So I've been trying to not do that. I've been trying to make sure that even though I lost, I'm taking advantage of the lessons learned and teaching others and taking advantage of the popularity gained and growing my state, right? Just this weekend I was out and we brought up three new county organizations that we didn't have. We only had 18 out of 62 counties covered in any way before the election. Now we're looking at 42. That is a massive change, and that's an infrastructure, you know, bill that we usually don't do. You know this. The average libertarian, when they go to run, they say, I've got a cool liberty message, and I'm super smart, so I'll run, and everyone will flock to me because everybody loves liberty. I won't have to raise money, and people will love me. And that's complete garbage, not true. But they believe it, so they go run. They get totally ignored by their party because their party infrastructure is broken and don't even know how to help them anyway. The media ignores them because they're a minor party. They get completely disenchanted. They get their ass kicked in every single way possible. Then they say, this sucks. They quit halfway through and then say Libertarian Party sucks, and they walk away. That's the norm. I wanted to break that norm. I knew not to count on help from the party. I was aware of that. I wanted party infrastructure, so I built it. I wanted a policy library, so I built it. And you know, Remzo, you watched a whole lot of it happen. So that's what I did. I decided to not wait for everyone else to help and just go and build. And as I built it, I found people starting to support me and help. So I got the help I needed, but not by asking for it, by just going off and getting it. And the best part about it is when I was going to lose, and in the end, I knew how bad it was at the end. I knew to keep fighting to the end and to keep going. Because once you take a loss, naturally there is a feeling of dread, a feeling of failure again, of course. But I knew that was going to happen. So that's why I stayed engaged. I stayed close so that we wouldn't do that. A lot of the people in my campaign literally got jobs because of my campaign, because people realized, wow, there are some real people here. I've also inspired many people in my state to run, and I've inspired many county organizations. So we've had a lot of success. Even though I knew as soon as I was done, that's when the mad crappers came out. Larry Sharpe sucks. He's terrible. He only got 2%. Oh, what a joke. Of course I knew that. But I'm a big boy. I'm not a child. So I was able to take that and keep moving. And I also knew that that was going to happen. So I dealt with it and moved on. My party fought me. People fought me. People still crap on me whenever they possibly can. I get it. But I don't care. I have a mission. I have something to move on, to make bigger and badder. And I want to follow Gandhi. People are going to crap him because they hate Gandhi too, but I don't care. I'm going to follow Gandhi's message, which is try to be the change you want to see in the world. So I want you and everyone else listening to watch my example and try your best to follow it if you think it's valuable. If you don't think it's valuable, I get it. I hope you do.
Absolutely. I don't disagree with anything you said. And the one thing I do want to emphasize is that, you know, for a lot of people that were, you know, watching your race as outside observers, the biggest criticism that I heard after the election in November was Larry Sharpe came in fourth in a two-man race. But you were also building up, you know, a whole war machine from nothing. You know, Mark Molinaro, despite being the sacrificial lamb, like, there is a party infrastructure.
There is.
And in terms of, you know, just the demographics of the voting population in New York, they typically lean left. Even the Republicans lean left. So it wasn't surprising how Howie Hawkins was able to get, you know, at least 8,000 more votes from you just because you're dealing with
sheer numbers. But in reality, hold on. This is something that you should understand and the listeners should know too.
Please explain.
That's not true. I actually did come in third.
Oh,
let me tell you why. Now, not that it matters. It's you know, it's, I say it
and,
so that—
And just for context, I was getting that from the New York Times election night coverage.
Oh, 100%. Yes. No, I get it. And officially that is true, which is why I tell you this not to complain or moan, but to make those who supported me feel better. This will give a warm, fuzzy feeling for those people who supported me. The ballot was absolutely against me in every way possible. And I mean this literally. I was the only person on the second column. Every other person was on the first column. I was the only one on the second column. So what does that mean? Some of the machines couldn't read my vote. So boom,
You guys have a crazy way of voting up in New York.
Oh, no. They purposely tried to stop me from doing anything. I get it. And I couldn't stop them. They basically said, sue us. We don't care. They didn't care. And they fought us even afterwards to change the registration to put Libertarian on the ballot. Took them over 6 months to put it on registration form. Could you imagine if there was a Democrat or Republican that wasn't on? It would have been in a week. So let me finish this point, if I could. So that couldn't be read. Not just that. I was the only candidate on the same line with somebody else. We were literally on the same line. Stephanie Miner and me were on the same line. Some people didn't know who my lieutenant governor was. So they circled Stephanie Miner and me, thinking that was my lieutenant governor, and that's a voided vote. There were over 100,000, six figures worth, of voided slash blank votes in New York State during this election on the gubernatorial line. That's the most there's ever been. So I got more than that, and that's all I'm saying. I didn't win. I'm not saying I won the election by any means. I'm just saying if you supported me, you should feel better because I actually did come in third. It's just the ballots wouldn't show it, couldn't show it, and I don't even know if it's worth a lawsuit because it's not enough for a win, so I get it and win. But in reality, it should make you feel better. I did actually come in third.
It really does because historically, like – you know, your race, like you were on TV, you were on Fox Business, you were on plenty of radio stations. Like no one can say you didn't put in the effort. I literally took
off a year and a half from my job and took no salary for a year and a half to do this because, and there's two reasons why I did it. I mean, why I was so hard on this. One, I knew that once I did this and we got ballot access, if I did it right and I crossed the entire state, which I did, I crossed every single county, all 52. More than once, that we'd be able to build our infrastructure so that we would never lose ballot access again. And that was one of my big goals. But the second thing was me doing it. Now I can point the finger at others and I can say, why the hell aren't you busting your ass? I did. I now have street cred to say, get off your butt. No paper candidate. Why the hell aren't you doing something?
Do you feel like you even need the Libertarian Party? Because it almost seems like they're more of a hindrance to you than they are an asset.
I'm very loyal to the party. One of my top advisors actually told me off the bat, he goes, don't you dare run Libertarian. He said, run independent because you'll gain the same number of people who will follow you anyway. The party will just get in your way. Run independent. And then once you get 50,000 votes, which you'll get anyway even without them, then rename your party Libertarian. And tell National to recognize you and you'll be fine. And that really was actually people told me to do that. You aren't the first person who told me to do that. But the reason, one of the reasons why I didn't do that, were two reasons. One, I didn't want to set that precedent because he's right. I could have done that. Most of the people in the state who followed me most of them who voted for me weren't actual libertarians. We only had 8,000 registered libertarians in the entire state and I got over 100,000 votes. So most were new people who heard me and came on board. That's true. And once we got ballot access, the party totally turned on me and began threatening to sue me, trying to stop me, all the horrible things you would assume the Libertarian Party would do. They did. That's true. But I didn't want to start that precedent of ignoring the party. And I also knew that if I went through the party, others could. And if I could, the solution here is dilution, right? The Libertarian Party has 45 years of a failure. So much of our talent has just said, I'm tired of this and walked away and gone to either nothing or other parties. So what's left? Too much percentage-wise of Libertarian Party is a bunch of curmudgeons who are mad at the world. There's too many of them, and percentage-wise. But as we get more people in, they become diluted. Those people exist in Democrat and Republican Party too. Those little minor people who just want things to be their own private clubs, they exist in those parties too. But they're so small, their impact is minor. So my goal was to simply, you know, have a lot of people here. And I've asked more than once, we have some very hardcore libertarians who I want, and I have said stay in the party. I want them to stay in the party. I want them to figure out that the right way is not to be an ass and to throw everybody out because I'm not libertarian enough, but instead, as guys like me bring more people into the party, to train them and teach them and mentor them and bring them in. People come to our party, the vast majority, not already libertarians. They come to our party thinking, this sounds pretty cool, but I'm still kind of hovering on my party. So when we're assholes to them, which we often are, they go back. But if we're not and we talk to them and mentor them, we can keep them. That's how we make actual change. The problem is we have too many people in the party, percentage-wise again, who don't care about change, who only care about feeling righteous. And when you care about feeling righteous, you turn people off.
Absolutely. And that's the thing that I don't think a lot of people really understand until they start to win races. I'm sorry, actually run races because, you know, like I've ran campaigns in areas where it's like, you know, this is a Republican majority area, so we have things going against us. This is a Democrat majority area, so we have stuff going against us.
Yep.
The thing is, like, there's a large amount of people that might say they're Republican or they're Democrat or they're independent. They're really just apathetic.
Yes,
because
correct.
They don't believe that anyone really cares about their issues.
100%
and that,
true.
And that's a unique thing about your campaign, was that your campaign was a uniquely New York campaign. There was stuff that you were running on that, you know, people across the country could listen to and learn from. But when it came to the stuff that the voters actually cared about, you crafted solutions based off what they were asking you to do with the libertarian angle. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people don't do, whether – and I don't think it's just the Libertarian Party, even though I did have one libertarian race I managed where someone from the state level said, you're not running a libertarian enough campaign. You're Democrat light or you're Republican light. And it's like, well, if you just listen to the voters, that's what ultimately matters. And I think it's a very I think it's a very elementary thing, because at the end of the day, like when it comes for like your state level and your local level stuff, it's never necessarily as partisan. It's more like, you know, potholes and street lights and who's going to fund the school type of issues.
Well, I'm unsure. In today's world, I think, you know, there's an old saying, all politics is local. I'm not sure that's true anymore. We are so polarized now, more than we've been, you know, since in my lifetime, for sure. I'll give you an example I mean by this. I was in upstate New York in North Country, and there was a farmer who was telling me how he's about to lose his farm. It's a sixth-generation farm. And for those of you not in New York State, New York's an old state, and we've had farms for literally hundreds of years here. And there are people who have, you know, five, six, seven, eight-generation farms. This is a sixth-generation farm. He's going to lose it. And he tells me the story, and I feel bad because I've heard his story 1,000 times already. And so his first question is not, you know, Larry, what's your plan for farmers? Or Larry, what can you do? Or how can you help? His first question was, what do you think about Trump? He had to judge.
Yeah, like, what the hell does that have to do with it?
That's correct. Yeah. And you would think that that would be irrelevant, because here's the thing. Whether I love Trump, hate Trump, whatever my feeling on Trump is, Trump was going to be the president after my race. Right? Doesn't matter. And whether you love Trump, hate Trump, whatever you think about Trump, Trump was not going to help his farm. Those two things were completely irrelevant. But the point is, he had to decide whether or not he could trust me based upon that answer. So even though politics may be local, the trust level is not. The trust level depends upon who is listening and when they're listening.
Well, was that a learning curve for you as you were hitting the campaign stump? Or was that something you already kind of went into it knowing was going to be a factor?
Yeah, you know, there were so many learning curves. Oh, my God. I mean, the thing I bring up constantly is we made a lot of mistakes in my campaign. And I think what annoyed me more than anything, of all the things that annoyed me, many things did. By the way, I didn't fire anybody for incompetence. No one got fired for incompetence in my campaign, because I wanted them to learn, figure it out, and get better so they could help somebody else. But was all the armchair guys who didn't bother helping at all, or didn't bother giving me a dollar, or didn't do anything to assist. And I have found myself often getting angry at them. I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't, but I do. I often scold them. And I ask them, great, what did you do? Well, I didn't, so shut up. If you're not going to help anybody, if you're not going to give money or time or advice before I made the error, you know what you can do? You can go take a hike. Because you're opening your mouth knowing that I'm up against, you know, the biggest engine in New York State. And instead of saying, hey, Larry, how can I help? You made an error. Let me give you some good advice. Or before you make the error, let me help you before I made the error, because I was very open to everybody's help. Instead, once I make the error, they just open up and take a big, massive dump over everybody. And what bothers me, again, is not me, to tell you the truth. I'm not bothered. My team is hurt. Because they busted their ass for this, and then people dump on them, and I get angry for them. I knew I was going to get dumped on. I still get dumped on every day, and I'm fine with that. But when they dump on the team, I get upset. It's just how I do. And I know some people say, Larry, you shouldn't get upset. And they're right. I shouldn't. But I'm still human, and it bothers me.
In terms of a lot of those voters who were kind of on the fence about who they were going to vote for, you know, what was your – what was the audience expectation when you showed up to these events where you might have been the first libertarian candidate some of these Republicans or some of these gun owners or some of these farmers may have ever heard from? Did they already have kind of like, you know, an idea of what you're going to be like? Did they already have like a prejudicial idea against what a libertarian candidate kind of is? Or were they pretty open-minded to hear what you had to say?
Well, that was the interesting part, right? And as a general rule, I would do something almost every time I was out. And what that was, I'd ask three questions. I would say, who here is now or was recently a registered Democrat? And who here now is recently or currently is a registered Republican? And who here now or recently is registered to vote but some other party? And I always got at least one of each. Always. Everywhere I went across the state. No one else could have done that. The people who came to me.
I'd be afraid to ask that question.
I know. And but I did it. And I did it live. You can go to any of my Facebook. I did it live on Facebook, not knowing who my audience was. I did it constantly. If you go back, they're still on my Facebook, Larry's Libertarian Facebook page. It's still there. If any of you care, you can go check out those. And I did it constantly. In fact, I just did it recently, yesterday when I was upstate. I did it recently. It happened again. There were Democrats, Republicans, and others in the audience. People still come to my events, and I haven't run the campaign's been over for 7 months, and people still come to my campaign to my events because they want change. Many of them think, "God, I made a mistake." So, yeah, I found all different types of people who were upset. So they wanted something. Many of them had no idea, and many of them forward were simply looking for their party light. Right? Most Democrats in New York State don't like our governor. They just are so scared of Republicans because Trump is going to eat their babies. And most Republicans don't like our governor, but they don't like their party because the Republican Party in New York State is completely broken and is basically Democrat-like. So both of them are unhappy. So if you're a Democrat coming to my campaign, you're hoping for Democrat-like. If you're a Republican coming to my campaign, you're hoping for Republican-like. So that's what most of them were hoping for, to be forward with you.
So, you know, as you mentioned, like months and months and months have passed. For a lot of people, it feels like it was just a few months ago. But when you said it was like 7 months ago, it's like, holy shit.
Yes.
You're still and that's the thing that's still like, you know, I admire about you because you're still going forward. And right now you've got a campaign going on. And this is kind of funny. It's hashtag full sharp. What are you doing, Larry? Do you just miss the spotlight, or are you bored? Or I mean, what's going on, man?
What spotlight? What spotlight? What media is covering me? Nobody is. Guys like you cover me. Thank you, because I know you love me. But no media is covering me. There's no spotlight here. That kind of idea is crazy. Of course, there's no spotlight. It's just punishment. When I'm up doing this, I don't get paid. I'm a consultant. So if I'm doing this, I'm not getting paid. I don't have a salary.
Yeah, you're either growing or you're dying.
That's correct. So I've got to get out there and get stuff done. So when I'm campaigning, I'm not making money. My family's not, you know, making money on this. So that's not happening at all. No, I'm doing it because I have to keep growing the party. I'm trying again. I'm trying to be the guy for people to raise. I go upstate and I raise money for others. I went to California and raised like $11,000, $12,000, whatever it was, $1,000 for their state party. Because they asked me. I raised like $3,000 or $4,000 for Pennsylvania. I've got $3,000 or $4,000 for Ohio. I'll go and just raise money for people. I do all the time. I did a fundraiser for someone in Utica up here in New York State. I did a fundraiser for Dwayne Whitmer, right? Katie Martin's running in Utica. Dwayne Whitmer's running in Western New York. And I went up there and I raised money for him. I go up and I do it because that's what the big parties do. They support each other. They show up. They promote each other. And they raise money for each other. And they are able to do that. When I go to some of these places, I don't get a dime. I'm not the star of the show. They are.
Yeah, like Jeb Bush still comes to Virginia every couple of months, and I think it's the most retarded thing because he comes here, he gives like his little Jeb Bush speech about, you know, a nicer, kinder America and all this other stuff, and then he takes like a 10% commission. So it's like, you know, they didn't raise much to begin with, and then Jeb, who's already a millionaire, is taking 10% of what they raised.
No, but that's still a good thing. I don't mind that. That's not let us go to that level. We're nowhere near that. Try to find a libertarian who will go up and raise money for somebody. You can't think of one except me.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I actually had to think for a second. I'm like, that's correct. Like it's just you.
And I've never asked that question of you, but I know because there aren't any.
You know what's really funny? I do want to kind of, you know, talk about myself for just a minute. Like when my book came out, Stay Away from the Libertarians, like it was like I offered, like I did a brief speaking tour. I went to student groups, I went to Young Americans for Liberty groups, and the biggest remark I got was, you know, Remso, you've tried to turn our history into a comedy, And while you do talk nicely about the libertarian movement, you do say some things that are nice about the Libertarian Party, we just feel like you didn't go hardcore enough on certain things. Like, we wanted someone to go full Rothbard. And my response to those people was, listen, when was the last time you had somebody that was trying to do outreach to non-libertarians and talk to them about libertarian ideas? It doesn't happen because it's hard. It also doesn't happen because sometimes some of the people are just unlikable. Yep. So it's also this degree of, even when you're trying to do good, you're not good enough. And that pisses me off so much. And
that does see, yeah. I expected that, so I'm not pissed off by that. Oh, I get crapped on all the time. That's the norm. And I tell people, when you want to run as a libertarian, we as a Libertarian Party have a bad habit, which I'm trying to break. Look, I do this because I want people to follow me. And I'm a libertarian, so I don't order people. I try to show by example and hope they choose to follow. Here's what our bad example is. We're like, we have ballot access. Let's run 1,000 libertarians. Let's run No, this is a terrible idea. Terrible idea. Well, it's branding. No, it isn't. No one knows who the fuck we are. That is embarrassingly a bad idea.
From your mouth to God's ear on that one.
Thank you. No, the right idea is a few candidates with a team, multiple teams. So we build up local libertarian infrastructure so that we attract better talent.
Yeah, like you come from you're a business owner. You come from sales. Like, law of averages does not work when it comes to voting. It does not work when it comes to voting.
But not just that. Look, here's the worst part. When we throw up 1,000 candidates, now it spreads our resources, which we don't have much. Now it spreads our talent, which we don't have much. So now we have one or two people running by themselves. They're going to suck and fail and do nothing. No, but here's the worst part. I tell people this. When they try to run, they're going to fail, be backstabbed and attacked, and never go back again. Here is my rules if you want to run. Now, again, you don't have to follow those rules, but here are mine anyway. Can you take at least 3 days off a week to run, meaning 3 days equivalent, whether that's at night, weekends, or during the week, whatever, to actually campaign? If you can't, don't run. Can you raise money? If you can't, don't run. Can you get a team of at least three people, campaign manager, event manager, social media manager? If you can't get at least those three, don't run. Can you take an emotional punch when people don't do, screw you over, do bad things, and get back up? If you can't take an emotional punch, don't run. Can you take people, when you get anywhere good at all, blatantly lying about you? Blatantly, publicly, openly lying about you. Can you not take that? Don't run. Can you take a knife in the back from people who are supposed to be on your side and keep going? If you can't, don't run. Because all of that is going to happen. And I don't mean maybe. Every single one of those things, if you run as a libertarian, is going to happen. The people who you like are going, who you think are your friends, are going to stab you directly in your back. Can you pull a knife out and give it back and say, I think this is your property, sir? Can you do that? If you can't do that, don't run. Instead, help someone else run who can do that. So you can see how that works, so you can get it and prepare yourself to whether or not you want to run or not. And that means a whole lot less candidates and a lot bigger team. My team, if you go to all my volunteers, was in the hundreds. I had 7 directors and at least 24 actual volunteers that I dealt with in some way, shape, or form every week or month. That's the kind of campaigns we have to run as a norm. That doesn't work when one guy runs by himself and his best buddy, and that's it.
Yeah.
We have to change our culture.
Absolutely. And kind of shifting gears a little bit. I mean, what you've done is, by battle testing your team, by going through this hellish process that, I mean, bless people like you, Larry, because I wouldn't want to have to have gone through what you did. So to a large degree, I'm thankful that there are people like you out in the world. But what you've done now is you have this platform set up, and you've set up something called Sharpway Media and the Sharpway Radio Show. Tell me a little bit about what you're doing with that and what your goal is, using the resources and the connections that you've made to keep pushing this in a non-electoral way.
Well, the first thing is, I wanted to set the example that I will support people still. That people who have called themselves my enemy have literally come to me and said, Larry, can I have help? And I go, yes. because I look at this movement.
Who the hell wants to be an enemy of Larry Sharp? It's like saying you don't like nice things.
Oh my God. All the time. All the time. But then they call me up or email me or someone connects them and says, Larry can help you. And they come to me and say, Larry, can you help? And I say, yes, because I see this movement as a family. And yeah, we fight. We fight all the time. Brothers and sisters fight. We do. But when it comes down to it, when mom is sick, we get together, right? Even though we don't like each other, mom's sick. So let's get together and help our mom. So I'm okay with that. So I'm very much open tent. I'm very much bygones be bygones. Let's just move on. So I do that all the time. So now that I've hopefully shown people that, now I start Shortwave Media. Shortwave Media is an organization or a media company that's going to do a lot of radio shows, right? So the podcast where there's call-ins, where there's video, you know, that type of radio show that can be picked up on internet, on multiple platforms. And this hopefully is going to be able to create lots of content and media. And the goal is I'll support people with this so that they can go on my show, that I can go out and talk. They can watch what I'm talking about, see how I'm doing it. They can copy me. They can come on my show. I can go on their show. We can become battle-tested back and forth, get better in the media, because very often we're terrible in the media, right? Most of the time, libertarians are one or two things in the media. One, bombastic. Two, boring. These are our two things we usually are. I want us to find the middle ground, and we can use this by being part of the media. What I struggled with during my campaign was getting mainstream media. It was very hard for me to get traditional media. But if you get even better social media, that does bleed over in traditional media. So Sharpway is going to be the way of talking about the way of getting things done, meaning the liberty movement is the third way. It's the only way we fix this country. It is liberty movement. Sharpway is going to show that's the way to kind of heal our wounds. We are the only movement where you don't have to convert, right? Republicans need Democrats to convert. Democrats need Republicans to convert. We don't. We need you to simply not force your views on others. If you're a conservative, if you're a liberal, doesn't matter. Just don't force your views on others. This is really about, in the long run, mutual respect. Mutual respect is really what the liberty movement's about. Life, liberty, happiness. How do we get there? Through mutual respect. That is actually what the liberty movement's about. We sadly talk all the time about liberty and freedom. That's not what we're about. That's actually a means to the end. Too many in our movement think liberty and freedom is the end. It's not. It's the means to an end. Why? There are lots of people in this world who don't want to be free. And that's okay. You can voluntarily put yourself in negative, situations where you surrender your freedoms. I did it. I joined the Marine Corps. I voluntarily gave my rights away. People go to rehab. They voluntarily detain themselves. People join other organizations where they give up their money. People agree to tithe and they surrender their income. Fine, that's all voluntary. Enjoy, go ahead, no problem. So it isn't the concept of freedom that is the end game. Freedom is the means to happiness, to include the freedom to not be free when you choose to not be free.
Exactly. And, you know, the one example of you kind of having this conversation of someone that doesn't necessarily have our succinct worldview on this was your interview of Joe Rogan. And, you know, a lot of people got upset for one reason or another about how that interview went. But like to a large degree, I kind of knew where Joe Rogan was coming from, because he was like, immediately, we live in such a statist environment where the idea of someone not making all the decisions for us tends to freak us out.
No, the Joe Rogan interview was my fault. And the reason why I say, I'm going to be very clear, I take full responsibility for that. I flew into his studio and that morning, I forgot what day it was, that morning into California, did the interview and flew back. I had been campaigning in New York State literally the day before and for days prior. I was accustomed to speaking to New Yorkers who know these things always. My communication, I was speaking like he was a New Yorker, and that's my fault. I should have been clear with him. He had very valid points. He was saying things like, well, no, the union, the teachers will get less money. In my head, I didn't get that he might think New York is like, you know, Kansas or Kentucky, where the teachers get $18,000 a year and don't get raises and stuff like that. But in New York State, the average teacher makes $80,000 a year, and the unions aren't going to stop. That's not going to happen. We're the most unionized state in the entire country. So what he was asking for New York was impossible, and I couldn't get that because I was so accustomed to talking to New Yorkers. So we were talking past each other. I should have been prepared for a non-New York conversation, and I wasn't. I should have been clearer with him, and I was not.
I mean, I think a lot of people make this mistake, and they don't often understand that. Like, for example, you know, I'm a big right-to-work advocate, except, you know, my right-to-work views are a bit – I'm not going to say they're changing, but I'm starting to learn more about how the other side views it. And I was talking to somebody from a radio station in Detroit about unions and right to work. And the guy was basically like, listen, like, I think right to work is fine. But my problem is once you go ahead and you codify it or you put in a state constitution, what that basically does is that makes the power of unions irrelevant. And, you know, I think, you know, conservatives, libertarians, we tend to take an all or nothing stance on unions. Like, the one thing I had to tell this guy was, like, I'm not anti-union. I'm just anti-union abuse. Because do I believe that in a free market you should be able to collectively bargain? Yeah.
Of course. But it's in the Constitution.
Yeah, but you see, he had never really spoken to anybody on the other side about this, and I had never spoken to anybody on the other side about this. So how I view, you know, right to work, you know, like I'm in Virginia, I'm right next to West Virginia with the coal mines. Mm-hmm. You do that to a bunch of coal miners who love their guns, love God, love Trump, and they're going to vote pro-line union on all that stuff. And, you know, to a large degree, I didn't necessarily know where he was coming from, nor did he really understand where I was coming from, because here I am, I'm talking about coal miners of Black Lung, and he's talking about how the auto industry destroyed Detroit. So I think that's one of the things that a lot of people need to understand. Like, I think a lot of Libertarian Party candidates, more so than the other parties, they tend to make big, widespread issues on a bunch of stuff that might be the national conversation. But when it comes to even local stuff, they're not necessarily the most literate. And then when they get to that point, it, you know, they feel like they're getting bogged down and they're getting ignored because they're not talking about those big hot topic issues.
Yeah. And on top of that, there are some things you just can't stop overnight. You got to realize the damage, particularly in my state, New York, the damage has happened over the course of literally decades. You don't fix that overnight. It's literally impossible. You just can't fix that overnight. It will take time. You have to dismantle it. And it's not just dismantling physically. It's dismantling culturally. There's massive change. You just can't go, union's bad. Plus, I don't think unions are bad. Unions are literally freedom of speech plus freedom of association. You actually have every right, if you want to, you know, collectively bargain. The problem is when you have government saying unions are awesome and better than the private sector. That's a problem.
Yeah.
I don't like when government gets involved with unions.
Exactly. Now, we've only got a few minutes left on the clock, Larry, so I kind of want to throw some 2020 questions at you or else people are going to bitch at me and I don't want
the headache.
Yes,
as long as you remember, go to sharpwaymedia.com or larrysharp.com to see what I'm doing.
Absolutely. Now, speaking of changing people's views gradually, I remember in 2008, when I would talk to more of my liberal friends and they'd be like, we don't want socialism. We just want better health care. We don't want socialism, but we just want to make sure everyone has a living wage. Now, when you look at the Democratic ticket, and I'm really looking forward to the Democratic primary debates, I think these are going to be hilarious, but they're talking about reparations. They're talking about what was one of the other ones? A basic minimum wage. They're talking about destroying the Electoral College. Like, I personally think they're setting themselves up for a disaster in that they're leaving a large amount of Americans and even people in their party, like they're leaving them behind almost. What's your take on the current slate of candidates that are running?
No, I think that's absolutely untrue. I think what the Democrats are doing is actually brilliant. And this is going to sound crazy, but hear me out.
Spill it.
Yes. If the Democrats do nothing and act like they did last time, Trump wins. That's a fact. If they do nothing and just act like they did last time, Trump wins. So they decided to do a bold move. And it's very bold. You're right. And it might fail. But if they do nothing, they fail. If they do this, they might actually win. To your point, though, before I have to preface this first. Since the second term of Obama, it has been openly and blatantly that no party cares about the other party. They simply don't reach across the aisle. They don't even try to. The first term of Obama and all the presidents before, Bush, Clinton, Reagan, all of them, all at least profess to be, hey, I'm a president of everybody. We're all Americans. Let's reach across the aisle. That was what every president did before the second term of Obama. Once second term of Obama happened, he was like, I'm a Democrat, to hell Republicans. I want my people to show up. I don't care about Republicans at all. Trump doubled down on that. He's like, I don't care about Democrats, they're all evil. I want my guys to show up. So now we're in a world where no one's trying to get the other. No one's trying to convert. They're just trying to motivate their people to show up because they know so many Americans have given up. Remember, 90 million Americans didn't vote in 2016. They want the people who aren't motivated to show up. That's their goal. That's why Trump is still campaigning even though he's 3 years out or 2 years out. He's still campaigning now. He has to show up, get people out, be motivated, be open to motivate his base to show up so they can beat some more Republicans show up than Democrats. He doesn't care about Democrats. The Democrats are exactly the same. So what they've done is they've purposely run 24 people. Why? They're trying something different than Trump is. They're trying to use technology and micro-targeting. So they have 24 people run so that they can micro-target every single type of Democrat in this country, gather all their data, get them in to have small little bits of money to donate, $10, $20, $15, $5, $1. There have been multiple $1 campaigns.
Do you think they're that coordinated?
What?
Do you think that they're that coordinated? Because I've kind of watched this thing thinking
not.
It's...
No. Okay. Each individual person is not, but the party itself is. That's how they got AOC elected, right? They had a swarm of people in the middle figuring stuff out. A bunch of them failed, but AOC won. They're playing that same game now. And what their goal is, by the first couple of debates and the first primaries, a bunch of people start dropping out. But as they drop out, their hope is, and I'm not saying this will work, I'm saying this is their plan. Their hope is those people will now endorse others, and slowly all the information and commitments will go to the next guy, and they'll get more people motivated, more people donated. And by the time they get down to the final guy, which right now is Biden, I don't know if that's going to stay, but right now it's Biden, his campaign will have all that data, all those people who make commitments, they'll double, triple commitments, they'll show up at the booth and overwhelm Republicans. If it works. Now, I'm not saying it will, because that failed in 2016. The Bernie bros didn't go to Hillary. Some of them stayed home, and some of them actually went to Trump because they were so mad at Hillary. They felt so betrayed. They wanted an outsider who they thought was Bernie, and they actually went to Trump. If it fails, Trump wins. But if this works, they beat Trump. I think it's actually brilliant. It's a gamble, but it's brilliant.
So two more questions, then we'll go ahead and wrap everything up. And I want to thank you again for taking the time to come on today.
Did that at least make sense?
Oh, it did. And honestly, like, it makes the whole situation more horrifying, because I think I've gotten just like, I feel like a little bit of Stockholm. Like, I've gotten used to Trump.
Yeah.
And all these other people freak me out. I think if it were the other way around, I think I might also be the same way. But it's just like, it kind of just freaks me out a little bit. And I didn't think of it that way. Like, I kind of looked at the whole thing. I'm like, wow, they're going to fuck each other over, and someone's going to end up like having a gang riot in the street. And it's going to be awesome to watch.
But there's going to be a gang riot either way, because we're in trouble for 2020, which is why I'm pushing the liberty movement so much. Because it doesn't matter who wins in 2020. We have a problem. If Trump wins, the left's going to say, the Russians did it. You know, oh, my God, we're in trouble. Everything's illegal. Why don't we impeach him? Blah, blah, blah. Right? If he wins. If he loses, the right's going to say, they stole the election. The left is evil. We're going to be socialist now. Either way, it's going to be bad.
So speaking of people that could have helped out the Libertarian Party specifically, do you think that Bill Weld has brought the LP back by leaving and instead attempting to primary Trump?
I'm not sure he's not going to be our nominee still.
Seriously?
Yes. I'm going
to – this is like – Bill Weld is like a bad ex-girlfriend, Larry.
You
like he cheats on you and he comes back. He sleeps with your friend and he comes back.
Look, let me clear on what he might do. Now, I don't know that he'll do this, but I'm not saying he won't do it either. He can go off and try to run against Trump, and he will try his best. His hope is that in some of the states where, you know, independents can vote in primaries, where they're open primaries, that he'll actually beat Trump in one of those states, like New Hampshire or something like that. That's his hope, is that he'll actually win one primary. But even if he doesn't, even if he just does reasonably well, if he actually wins, he hopes, because he is anti-Trump more than he is anything else. That's what Bill Weld is.
I can agree with you on that. He's anti-Trump
more than anything else. So he hopes to put a blade in Trump's side that's going to make him bleed out. That's his hope. And then, you know, say April, he comes back to libertarians and says, look, I did well in the primary. Look what I've done. If he actually beats Trump in a primary, like in an open primary, Democrats rush out, independents rush out, and that'll be his hope. I don't know if it'll happen. Then he'd come to us and go, see, in an open primary when everyone's voting, I beat Trump. And the delegate class of Libertarian Party might vote him back in. So I'm not saying he's gone yet. He might be, but that's not a crazy scenario.
So does this mean that no Larry Sharp 2020?
It means Larry Sharp is not running for president in 2020. That's correct.
All right, folks, you got on the record. Larry, hey, this was an excellent conversation, and I wish you nothing but the best of luck in everything you're doing. You want to go ahead and give out your website and all your social media one more time before we hang it up?
Remember, Larry Sharp, Libertarian Facebook page, Larry.Sharp Instagram, also LarrySharp.com, and TheSharpWay.com. Please go check it out, and eventually The Sharp Way, also Facebook page.
All right, folks. Well, you heard it. This is going to be an interesting time to see how things not only go for Larry, but for the rest of the country. And I hope to have more conversations like this. As always, hey, actually, no, I almost forgot. Help me out with my Indiegogo campaign. I've got my second book already written, How to Succeed in Politics and Other Forms of Devil Worship. It's a dark comedy with a blend of fiction and a blend of American history. I've sent it off to beta readers already, and what they're saying is this book is exactly the type of dark comedy we need for the political landscape we're in. So you can go ahead and join that Indiegogo campaign for as low as $7. I'll send you a signed copy of my first book, Stay Away from the Libertarians. A lot of other perks as well for everyone that donates a little bit higher. Hoping to have the book by December 2019 instead of March 2020. So that's about it. I'll go ahead and have the link in the show notes. And for everything that Larry mentioned, I'll go ahead and have all of his links in the show notes as well. As always, this is the Remso Martinez Experience. Good night, America.